Jason, I'm really disappointed in you.
Well, let's start making the list. Why?
Well, you didn't live up to the Vinyl Ventures minimum flare number. 15 is the minimum number of flares.
See, 15.
I've got my flare on. I've got more than 15. I'm an overachiever.
Yeah.
Not like Brian, who had 37.
Yeah, but he did. I'm so sorry. In the maelstrom of
maelstrom.
Getting ready for the show, I forgot my flare. But I consider my records to be my flare wheels.
Okay, we'll go with that. Good friends of Vinyl Land, we've got an amazing show for you today. I mean, every show is amazing, but this one is historic.
It's special.
It's special.
For a couple of reasons. Go ahead and list them off.
One.
Number one.
The historic. This is the biggest one. Mm-hmm. It's a no hatch. Oh, one of my pieces of flair fell off.
Just in time.
Oh, no.
So it's a no hat show.
It's a no hat show. Both of us are not wearing, either one of us are wearing hats.
And secondly, John's got the flare.
I've got the flare, and but I'm missing one. But I had well over 15.
One of them just fell off.
One of them fell off.
But tell us about what we're doing with the show.
Yeah, tonight. We haven't even told you what the name of the show is. It's The Colors of Our Collection.
The Colors of Our Collection. And we're talking bands with colors in their names, albums with colors in their titles, or songs with colors in their titles, or some kind of a combination of all three.
However you interpret colors.
And I threw this out there like last week, and it just popped in my head. There's no inspiration for it. And then I started digging into the records. There are a lot of colors in rock and roll, in country, in jazz. They're all over the place. So it's going to be a great show.
And we didn't even do colored vinyl.
I know, but I was trying to, as I was, you know, going through everything, I was like, how cool would it be if I could only bring colored vinyl?
That'll be another show.
Yeah, that'll be another one. But, I mean, I guess black is a color, right?
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so that was our inspired idea for the show today. And do you want to start us off with your first?
I will kick it off.
Okay, kick it off.
Because when you have color, what's better to do than go sunbathing?
Nice.
Right.
And your first?
And my first will be Parquet Courts, Sunbathing Animal.
I love it.
And they have a song on here, Black and White.
Beautiful. I don't think I've ever listened to these guys.
They're kind of a, for lack of a better term, desert stoner rock.
Oh, okay. Okay. I gotcha. And how did you get into them? I mean, is it something that you heard?
I heard a cut on XM radio,
yeah,
and I really liked it. So yeah. I started ferreting out more, and I'm like, I like everything these guys do.
That's awesome.
They're kind of talk singers.
Oh, okay.
And well, they're garage rock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super fun.
Not overly produced.
Not overly produced, no.
Nice. I love the artwork with the red tiger on the front.
Yeah.
So that could be, you know, it's red.
The glass perimeter of me.
I love it. And then you got the back, which
a nudie
is a yeah, kind of a obscure nude portrait of someone falling backwards.
Maybe? Oh, and look, I didn't even, what color is blood? Another color.
Look at that. Reference. Sometimes I found that too when I was going through my stuff. I'm like, oh, there's other things that I initially thought of for colors on this. And the great thing is, I love the, I mean, you have the red on the front, but then the back is kind of this orange.
Yeah, they're very much, cool. this whole album, it's very much like a cake design.
Yeah, I was just getting ready yeah, to say that. Hanging to my bones as they dry. Huh, no, not
artwork by
Noah.
A. Savage.
A. Savage. Well, I get it. That's cool.
Sure.
I, you know, it's not that I'm too busy to listen to stuff, but all of the all of the things that we have talked about on the show just mount up. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of music out there, and sometimes you just grab what your ears hear.
Yeah.
Like if, I mean, that's one of the advantages of XM radio. You get to hear a lot of different stuff, and I'll flip around to channels I don't usually listen to.
I do the same thing.
Try to discover something new.
Yeah. And it's not hard to do, but I do find my listening habits when it's me in the DJ booth.
Yeah.
To be kind of the same most of the time, except I was listening to my favorite new country band today when you came in.
Yeah.
I was listening to Midland. They're fantastic. No color songs with them, but
you checked. I'm
sure. I did, but that's a cool one. That's a great one to come out with. And like I said, I love the kind of like pasted artwork.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a neat minimalist art design.
And the other thing that I love is that the spine of this is so easily.
Well, it's a gatefold, so
easy to read. Yeah, read. Now I'm talking colors, and I'm not even intending to. That's cool. That's a good one to start with.
Yeah, and probably the standout cut on this album, if you're not listening to Black and White, Ducking and Dodging.
Okay.
I think that's the song that I first discovered.
What year are we talking?
What year? I mean, let's see.
I don't.
2014.
2014 is the year that this came out. Cool. Awesome. Good one to start with. I'm not starting with an unknown band.
Starting with a known band. Let's see what it is. Drum roll, please.
My next one, or I guess my first one, is a Rush record called A Show of Hands. And this came out, put your hands up. This came out in...
Put your hands up.
So this came out in 1988. It was their first live album, I think, since Exit Stage Left. So it had been a while. And I've always loved the artwork. It's obviously very 80s. But... The standout song on here is Red Sector A, which I love. And it's from their 80s material. So a lot of that music was kind of inspired by the paranoia of like war. Before the wall came down, I mean, we always had that thing in school where you're like getting under your desk if there's ever an emergency or anything.
Yeah.
And the song Red Sector A was like the first one I thought of when we decided to do a show on colors, because it just stands out so much to me. It has a like a paranoia built into it
that's
really, really cool. I'll have to play it for you, but this is such a good representation of them live, and I love the
another gatefold the too.
Photography. Yeah, I always thought that there's Getty with his messy mop and ponytail pulled back. But
he's not wearing a hat.
Uh-uh. He got the message. It was always one of my favorite tunes by them. And this one has The Big Money, Subdivisions, Marathon, Turn the Page, Manhattan Project, Mission, Distant Early Warning. This came out after Hold Your Fire came out in 1987. So a lot of the material on this is from that album. That you have Time Stand Still, Force 10. If we were doing a numbers show, that would probably be one of the first ones that I talk about. And Closer to the Heart rounds it out. But I just got this because a friend found it and told me he got it. And I'm like, man, I don't have that. So I got it. And it's a great record. But like I said, I've always loved the artwork on it.
Yeah, it's just, that's super cool.
Yeah, it definitely stands out. So Rush, A Show of Hands. Y'all should go check it out. What's your next one, Wheels?
Well, we're going to stay in the black and white realm. INXS, Shabu, Shaba. It kicks off side two, black and white.
So should you do something?
I should do something.
Yeah, special for this record.
We're in black and white.
I love it.
Ooh,
I love it.
Spooky. You know, it's around Halloween, so why not?
Got to take that color out. You got to desaturate.
So this was INXS's third album.
Okay.
And probably this was their breakthrough in the U.S. And it came out in 82.
So Black and White is the song.
Black and White. And this record, I mean, Don't Change is probably the big standout track, mm-hmm. which, in a weird way, closes out the whole album.
Strange.
It's, but Don't Change was the one that everybody knew.
Yeah.
And
it, were you inspired by Will to include an Australian band?
I love NXS.
I do too. And I have all of their stuff except their last two albums.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the same way. I haven't dove into their later catalog mm-hmm. that much, and I really need to.
I mean, Kick is an incredible record.
Yeah.
And that, like, buying it new, I don't see it used a lot, but it pops up new here and there, and a lot of times it'll be expensive. So,
well, anything used is going to be expensive, which still blows my mind because, I mean, the records produced in the 70s and 80s, people say they sound great, but I don't see how this flimsy little thing that's, like not even as thick as
a comb or something. Yeah.
A small cardboard, they're just flimsy records.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a place in my heart for some original pressings, but I'm not like going out and diving into the crates to find the original press. Like if I got Kick, I would get a new re-release of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of things where they're probably mastering from the same tapes they mastered the album from just because of the era.
Yeah. Yeah. But as we said, the raw materials seem to be better and the quality of the pressings and just the technology that has caught up makes a huge difference. But I have this in its original pressing, or at least an early pressing.
Yeah, and this, wonder if this was, I had to look and see if this was a record club for me. It was not.
Yeah, good old Atco Records right there.
I remember when I first discovered these guys, I just fell in love with them immediately.
Where did you first hear them?
I discovered a lot of stuff in the 80s through Trouser Press magazine, which was kind of a new wave punk magazine. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the show Square Pegs?
I do.
With Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yeah.
Which was ABC Monday night, Tuesday night?
Yeah.
They would play all kinds of emerging music, and you could discover new music that way.
Really?
Yeah. Wasn't on very long.
I was going to say that show wasn't.
It was maybe two seasons.
What year would that have been, do you think?
Maybe even 81.
No kidding.
Okay. I'll have to look it up when it premiered. It was right in there.
And so they would have contemporary music on the show. Interesting, because like fast forward like 5-10 years for me, a lot of new music was discovered on Friday Night Videos.
Yeah.
And then, of course, MTV.
When did MTV go on? 82?
I think it was 82 or 83.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I remember the first time I saw MTV was at my aunt's house. And I couldn't wrap my mind around a TV station just devoted to music. I mean, it kind of exploded the mind, but you kind of look at its life, death, resurgence. I mean, MTV is a shell of its former self. It's
too bad because it was a great way to discover new music, but I mean, there's so many ways now. You can go on YouTube and look at new music till the cows come home and you won't even have grazed.
Yeah.
See what I did there? Grazed cows.
Cows, I see.
You will not even have grazed what's out there.
Speaking of grazing, did you grab your piece of flair that fell?
I will.
Oh, okay.
I'll get it. It doesn't have to be on right now.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
I stole my goat.
Nice. That doesn't look too bad. Anyway, that's a good call. In excess, Shabu Shaba, Black and White.
You're up, partner. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to talk about a band that I don't think gets talked about enough in America, and that's Deep Purple.
Ooh.
And this is Come Taste the Band. This came out in 1975. This is the Mark IV version of the band. So it has David Coverdale, Tommy Bolin, John Lord, Ian Pace, Glenn Hughes, and that is considered the Mark IV version of Deep Purple because
the fourth.
Yeah, like, you know, Ritchie Blackmore had left and he was kind of like the soul of the band. And this is a great version of this band. I mean, Coverdale was basically, I just heard the story recently when their original singer was out, they just put an ad out like for anybody to audition for Deep Purple. And this is at a time when most people here aren't that familiar with Deep Purple, but worldwide they're a huge band. And in their heyday in Europe, they were just enormous. They never got to that point here. People know like two or three of their songs. But for like a huge band like that, even amidst turmoil when there's like band members leaving, for them to say, oh, we'll just throw it out there. So David Coverdale ended up putting like some of the stuff that he was doing with one of his bands together and sent it in to them. And I think he told the story, they wanted like a photo. So his mom told him to include his Boy Scout photo. So he sent his audition with his Boy Scout photo. And I guess that got him noticed by the band, or they thought that he had a sense of humor. And that's basically how he got the job.
Wow.
But yeah. And Glenn Hughes was the bassist, who is an incredible singer in and of himself. So I always like talking about, this is basically the last album the band did. They broke up for a while after this and then got back together. But this has Coming Home, Lady Luck, Getting Tighter, Dealer, I Need Love, Drifter, Love Child, This Time Around, Ode to G, instrumental, and You Keep on Moving. It's just a great, great record. I love the cover.
I love the cover too.
With a glass of wine, yeah. And then on the back you see the empty glass of wine with the like lipstick mark on the glass. They're an endlessly fascinating band, and they've gone through so many like versions. And I think like 4 or 5 years ago they made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is a big deal because you have people like Lars Ulrich and these huge contemporary stars that are absolutely crazy about Deep Purple.
Yeah.
They just, like I said, they just aren't that big in the US. I mean, Smoke on the Water.
Yeah.
Is
that's what everybody thinks.
Is what everybody thinks of. It reminds me of Thin Lizzy. You know, people think of Thin Lizzy and The Boys Are Back in Town. They have so many more good songs than that. I've always been a fan of Coverdale, and there he is right there. His voice. And then of course he went on to form Whitesnake, and then that became an enormous thing.
And it falls into our colors. Whitesnake.
I almost brought a Whitesnake album, but I wanted to bring a Deep Purple record because to give them give them the little shout out. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, come taste the band, Deep Purple. Give it a listen, folks.
All right. You know, when I see a red door, I want it painted black. And
gee, are you going to talk about the Beatles next?
The Rolling Stones. And the funny thing is, this is interesting. This is the Decca release. It's a UK version.
Yeah.
And Aftermath in the US had Paint It Black as the first cut. In the UK,
not on the record.
No, it's not even on the record.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
So the only way you could get it on a record in the UK was in collections if you didn't buy the single.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the first, well, actually,
I can take that.
Big Hits, High Tides, or whatever that. This is Hot Rocks.
Yeah.
But Big Hits and High Tides, I think, was the first time the English audience could get it on a full album.
Isn't that strange?
I mean, so weird.
We talked, I just kind of listened back to Keith's Beatles episode, which is a great episode. But it's so interesting how singles oriented all of those groups were.
You don't
in
even
the
60s. Think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Paint It Black's a huge song.
Yeah, there was a little bit, on the original release, there was a typographical error where Paint It and then there was a comma, and then black. And with all the racial tension going on, people are like, is this a sign? Are you saying something about black?
Is it like a social
statement? Like a social commentary. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just a typographical error.
That is so weird. So I wonder if that presses.
Oh, I'm sure that press is worth some cash.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, the further we go along, I just appreciate the Stones more and more, especially since they have a new record coming out.
Which I've heard a couple of tracks, and it's supposed to be really good, which is surprising. I mean, don't think of, you know, these 80-year-old cats putting out really good music again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're without Charlie, but the one headline I read is the Stones are actually releasing a record you'll want to listen to more than once.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, that says a lot. I have always said that their more contemporary stuff is very good, but nobody listens to it. I mean, you know, people listen to it, but
not really.
Yeah, it'll get released. They'll release a video.
Yeah.
It'll probably get played on like a classic rock station once or twice, and then it's forgotten about. But I hear the new records really. I think it's called Hackney Diamonds.
Yeah.
So, but no, Paint It Black is way up there.
I love that song, and I love covers of that song.
Yeah.
I like everything about it.
It's certainly one of their songs that is covered a lot.
You know, it's funny, when you mentioned the Beatles, there was a little bit of a controversy with that song, because everybody was like, oh, they included a sitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're like, oh, they're just trying to rip off the Beatles.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
But that was going on in 66 when it came out. I mean, that was the...
Yeah, was it Tomorrow Never Knows, the first song that they had the sitar on, the Beatles? I wish Keith was here. He's in Hawaii.
Yeah, he would tell us.
He's in Hawaii right now. But yeah, I mean, one person or one group started to do something, and then they got a direct response from other groups.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles, I feel like the Beatles went back and forth with the Beach Boys in that regard. Not necessarily the Stones. I don't feel like they went back and forth with the Stones with ideas or material or sounds or something, but that's definitely one.
Oh, yeah.
That after the Beatles introduced it, you heard it in a lot of stuff.
And the funny thing is, it charted number one in the UK for like 10 weeks, and it wasn't even on the album.
Paint It Black did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild. Huh.
That tells you how important singles were.
Well, I wonder.
They were maybe even more important in Europe than they were here.
I wonder if there was any wisdom to that they knew it was a good song, if they thought that it would. I don't know. That's just so strange.
Yeah.
That's a strange approach. But this was, again, at the time when they were starting to think from more of an album perspective, or even before that popped up. So.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, by the end of the 60s, everybody was thinking more album, the term album-oriented rock.
Yeah. And just as a little teaser, this album is probably going to be, sometime in the near future, is going to be a deep disc dive. Just so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So keep that in your minds. That's a good one, man. I have never seen that cover.
And it was weird in the, I think I got that when I was working at the record store. There was another record store in the mall, and they would have a lot of imports for less, which is kind of hard to even fathom.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this one was from Germany.
Yeah.
But they had all these records from Germany and Portugal. So I have a lot of Portuguese releases and German releases and Spanish releases, just because they were... I was a poor college student, so.
It's so weird to think of a time when imported records are cheaper than the ones you can get here. It's so crazy. That's a good one, man. I love it. I love that cover, that color.
Yeah.
That's just.
Now, I didn't even realize until we started doing research for this that it's not on the European release.
That's so,
so
crazy.
Now I got to get. Aftermath, the U.S. release.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're up.
I'm going to go with a name.
Ooh, that's
the Black Crowes. It is naughty. This is the original cover for Amorica. This is the Black Crowes' third record. and it was released in 1994. Obviously, you can see the cover ended up being
censored,
and it became an all black cover with just like the American bikini, and you don't see the details popping out of the
spiders.
Top there. So I remember when this came out, and then a bunch of stores wouldn't sell it.
Wouldn't even sell it, let alone display it.
Yeah. So then they had a backup, and it was that second black cover. That kind of controversy always just captures my attention.
Yeah, I love controversy on album covers.
Yeah. And you know, it was the mid-90s. It seems like it was 100 years ago, but it was only, you know, 30. And like I said, you have like the Tipper Gore parental advisory hearings in the 80s. And then I just remember stores like Walmart would not only not carry, you know, objectionable covers, but they wouldn't, the music you got there would be edited.
Oh, so, yeah.
So if you got like a White Zombie record from Walmart, it would be edited. It's not the actual release.
I'm surprised they even let you buy White Zombie at Walmart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was still too much money to be made there. But if you go there now, they'll sell any record. I mean, they're selling vinyl there and a little section of CDs, but they'll sell any record. I mean,
the philosophy has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're in a different time. And obviously the mid-90s was when vinyl was at its lowest valley as far as sales and popularity and stuff. But I've always loved this record. It starts with Gone. A Conspiracy is one of the big songs. Cursed Diamonds, another good one. She Gave Good Sunflower. Downtown Money Waster. And the last song on here is Descending. And that might be like my favorite Black Crow song. It's very, very good. I think that the band had recorded another record, and I think it was called Tall, and then they decided not to release it. So some of these songs, I think, are from that.
Leftovers.
Yeah, yeah. And then they put some other tunes together. But I've just always loved this record. I mean, I've always loved this band because they came about at a time, you know, in the late 80s when it was all about big hair and spandex. And here comes this group of kids from Georgia that kind of sound like an American Rolling Stones.
Yeah, that's who they were compared to endlessly.
Yeah, yeah. And I just love them. I love the fact that they're back together, except for the fact that it's not the original band. But the brothers are back together. They're touring. I think they're making a new album. So it's, you know, there's a happy ending there. It's not an Oasis story right now.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Black Crowes, Amorica. Check it out. What's next for you?
So I'm feeling a little trippy. You know where I'm heading with this?
Yeah.
White Rabbit. Jefferson Airplane.
I don't have this.
And this is another, look, it was the Best Buy series. So this is another record that I bought during that time because it was in the cheap bin and I had no money and it's like, ooh, I want that.
Yeah. This is one of their really big albums, like one of their first really big albums.
Oh, absolutely. This was, I think, driven on the Woodstock performance.
Yeah, yeah. And the song White Rabbit is kind of like
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, an Alice in Wonderland kind of acid trip.
Absolutely.
Kind of tune, right?
Yeah, it's a trippy tune.
Yeah. I've always loved the name of the album. I just want to be there when somebody, well, why don't we call it Surrealistic Pillow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's do that.
But, you know, the chemicals probably had something to do with that too. But no, what are the other?
Boy, I don't know if there's anything that really stands out. I mean, Somebody to Love, sorry.
Oh, okay, song.
Somebody to Love is probably the more popular song off the album.
Big
so there
song.
Are two huge hits off this album.
Right. And then it ends on side two with Plastic Fantastic Lover.
And so you have that. None of these songs, I mean, are super long. Well, coming back to me is like a 518, so that's clocking a little longer. It seems like I've heard White Rabbit as a longer tune a few times, probably a live cut.
How long is it on
it's
here?
It's only 227.
Huh. Yeah, I wonder if there was an extended version of it, because it seems like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is a very... I don't want to say spooky. It's just very, it's trippy. It's different.
I think spooky is a good way to put it. Yeah.
It's not one of those songs you would immediately drop a quarter in the jukebox machine and expect to hear.
No. While you're eating your breakfast at Waffle House.
It's definitely a mood setting song.
Yeah. And every time I think of Somebody to Love, I think of Cable Guy.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey singing the karaoke version of that is just absolute comedy gold. That's a good one, man. I almost dropped it. I've always loved the cover of this too.
Yeah, and look, they're all kind of stone faced except for Grace.
I love Grace.
Yeah.
She had such a great voice. She was so beautiful. Was it Jim Cantor that she ended up married to from the band?
I think so.
No, I'm sorry.
Isn't that Cantner? Isn't that one of the...
Paul Cantner. Was it Paul Cantner? I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know.
She married one of these guys, but I think that there was a... I think there was like a Fleetwood Mac kind of thing going on.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in the band.
Yeah. So, no, that's a great one, man. I actually thought of that once we decided to do this show, and I'm like, oh, I don't have any of their stuff.
Oh, really?
On vinyl.
Yeah, I think this is, I may have the one that came out after this also.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll have to get it. I mean, it's
definitely a dated listen.
Yeah.
I mean, when you listen to this album, it's very, you feel like you're in the 60s.
Yeah,
you feel like there's no update. It's definitely 60s feel all the way.
Hate Ashbury in San Francisco, and yeah, a lot of crazy stuff going on. That's a good one, man. I like it.
I like your style.
Rabbits Will Be Back.
So the next one I'm going to talk about
is
the Desaturating Seven, which I have spoken about before. This is Primus's album that is based on the book called The Rainbow Goblins. And so Les Claypool, interesting dude,
look at those goblins.
Had this Rainbow Goblins book, and he read it to his kids when they were little ones. And the story is basically these goblins steal the colors from the world.
That's perfect.
Kind of trippy.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I know I've mentioned this before, but I just think, let me show you something here. Let me take this out of here. This does kind of intersect. This is unplanned. Sorry. But look at this. Isn't that cool? It's just got all the colors in it. Splatter.
Not
vinyl.
Stolen.
Hmm?
Because the Rainbow Goblins have not gotten
they
the
have
colors.
Not, they have not stolen the colors from the record. Let me tell you a little about this. This came out in 2017. The runtime is only 34 minutes and 38 seconds. And they kind of got people kind of whined and complained about a short runtime like that. But it's a concept album based on a children's book, folks.
Yeah.
Come on, get over it. So you got seven songs: The Valley, The Seven, The Trek, The Scheme, The Dream, The Storm, and The End. And I love it. My wife actually bought a first print of the book, the original book for me. So
nice.
I have it too. But yeah, Les Claypool and Primus are like the anti-pop dudes. And I remember the first time, I think the first Primus song I heard like in the early 90s was Jesus Was a Race Car Driver. I think that was the first one. And it's just...
Jerry, Jesus, whatever, float your boat.
Jerry was a race car driver.
I'm sure Jesus would be a really good gray race car driver.
Maybe Jesus works right down the way from us here.
He could. He's driving a race car around.
I mean, I would have felt bad if I jumped outside and told Jesus to stop racing this car.
That would have been.
It would have been a bummer. Anywho, this record is very cool. I love the idea of a concept record like this. We've all been bombarded with concept. We need to do a concept record show.
Yeah, we've probably talked about all the concept records, but there's more out there.
There always are. But, you know, some of them are half-baked ideas. I think some of those concept record ideas just really stand out. And this is one, when I heard that they were recording it, I'm like, oh, I got to have that. And I wasn't even a huge Primus fan. But in the years since this came out in 17, he's done a couple of albums with Sean Lennon under the Claypool Lennon Delirium.
And those are really, really standout records.
They are standout records, and they kind of remind me of what Pink Floyd would be doing if they were in their initial, if all of the original members were still participating together.
Yeah, because those records are really just making music they want to make.
Yeah.
They don't care if it sells.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, you know, this isn't necessarily a color, but the concept is around color, and it's splatter vinyl. So I kind of did a twofer there.
That's nice. Yeah. I like it.
Thanks, man. And of course I left the shrink and the silver hype sticker on there. So, and it's rectangular, which is approved.
What's next?
What's your next colorful?
Right. Let's stay scary with rabbits.
Okay.
So we talked about the white rabbit. Let's talk about a black rabbit.
Okay.
Alien sex fiend. Who's been sleeping in my brain? And and I'll give you a guess what kind of band this is.
I'm going to guess punk.
Gothic.
Gothic.
And they were formed and some of the, well, the main members have pseudonyms.
Okay.
Nick Fiend and Mrs. Fiend.
Okay.
Which Mrs. Fiend is Nick's wife.
Okay. That makes sense.
But yeah, so, and they're the two members that have been with the band throughout, but I'm trying to think of another gothic band to describe. They're very Sisters of Mercy.
I was getting ready to say that, or Jesus and Mary Chain, maybe.
Jesus and Mary Chain. Yeah, both those bands would say Alien Sex Fiend was a big influence.
Okay, cool. I love the cover. Is this artwork done by Mr. Fiend?
I don't know. You know, you always ask me about the artwork, and I never, ever know.
Where are these guys from? Europe?
The UK.
UK, okay.
Yeah, and they started in 82, and five of the group's albums and 12 of their singles reached top 20 positions in the UK.
No kidding.
Which is, I mean, they were big in Europe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for a band called Alien Sex Fiend.
Yeah.
To be able to do that, that's pretty good.
And Who's Been Sleeping in My Brain is the one that everybody would know.
That old trope that you hear on the radio all the time. No, I love it. Are there any other tunes on here that stand out?
Really, Who's Been Sleeping in My Brain,
okay,
I think is the big one that would be the song anybody would know.
Cool. Back in the days, it's Relativity Records. And back in the day where you had a P.O. box address, because that's how you joined the
Alien Sex Fiend
fan club. Yeah. I wonder how many pieces of flair they need.
Many. I'm sure. They don't have any. Oh, he has a little bit of flair. Not a lot.
Well, it's like they almost look like zombies here. And they've got like a battle axe and they're holding a sex doll by her hair here with the big skulls Well, that's obviously New York City.
Yeah, the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
They're still standing.
You know, I love looking at album covers and picking out details like that.
Yeah, it's a whole post-apocalyptic scene.
Yeah.
We've got this little bat spaceship shooting.
That's great. I think we need to take some of the acid from the surrealistic pillow and then start talking about this cover.
Yeah. Alien Sex Fiend. If you have not heard this band, and you're into gothic stuff, they're great. White Zombie would, Rob Zombie would love this band.
I bet he probably did.
Yeah.
And I guess since you just mentioned the name of the band, I had to bring White Zombie's Astro Creep 2000. Perfect. This record is just fantastic. It sounds great. I think it is the peak of what Rob Zombie does.
It's stereophonic space sound.
Yeah, the actual title is Astro Creep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction, and Other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head. There's an album title for you. So, More Human Than Human is the big song off of this. This kind of took their previous record, Los Exorcisto, and kind of went to the nth as far as heaviness and that like groove, chunka-chunka guitar music. But I just love this record. This is a great one to listen to when you're working out or, you know, when you just need a little extra energy cleaning the house or whatever. And then, of course, it's filled with Rob's artwork and stuff. I was thinking of, like, the bands to bring in for color and White Zombie, one of the first ones that...
That's a great pick. I didn't even... You know, the funny thing is, I didn't even think of band names. For some reason, I was...
You were concentrating on songs.
I was concentrating on songs.
That's okay. That's why we make a good team, man. But yeah, this is just a great album. The songs, Electric Head Part 1, Supercharger Heaven, that's a really good one. Real Solution Number 9, Creature of the Wheel, Electric Head Part 2, The Ecstasy, Grease Paint and Monkey Brains, I, Zombie, More Human Than Human, El Fantasmo and the Chicken Run Blastorama, Blur the Technicolor, and Blood, Milk, and Sky. I mean, he's not just creative with the music and with the album covers and the hairdo and the movies he makes. I mean, the songs are very creatively.
He's created a whole genre.
He really has, kind of like the, I don't know, scare metal, like.
Yeah. That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah,
scare metal.
He's touring with Alice Cooper, you know,
which is a perfect pairing.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a good one. For a while, this was very hard to find on vinyl. Actually, on CD, it was hard to find too. When it came out, I looked for it used everywhere and couldn't find it because everybody kept it because they liked it.
All of the White Zombie stuff's not readily available.
Yeah,
I mean it's out there, but you got to pick and choose a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder to find.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's a good one.
Thanks, man.
I like White Zombie. All right, I've had a white rabbit, a black rabbit. Now we're gonna kill the rabbit. Red rabbit.
Nice.
The Shins.
Their artwork is always so interesting.
I love their artwork.
Yeah.
Their artwork is, it creates a feeling.
Yeah.
When you see it.
Yeah.
And it is all artistic.
Mm-hmm.
Wincing the Night Away came out in 2007.
Okay.
And it was, the Shins' very first album was 2001, Inverted World.
Oh, Inverted World, that's right.
Yeah, and then Shoots Too Narrow in 2003. So this was, they were touring extensively at that point. So this was kind of at a touring break because from 2003 until this came out in 2007, they'd done a ton of touring. So,
what's the album called? Wincing the Night Away.
Yeah, Wincing the Night Away.
So you went with a song. Red Rabbits.
Yeah, Red Rabbits.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. They're another band that just kind of exists in the periphery a little bit. You know what I mean? And every time I hear them, I'm like, man, this is really good, really creative stuff. And I just don't listen to them enough.
I don't know. There's something about their sound. It's very relaxing. Mm-hmm. It's not like party music, but it's just very mood setting music.
Yeah.
There was a soundtrack, Garden State. Shins were one of the bands that were featured heavily on that soundtrack. And I'm not kidding. There was one point I had that soundtrack in my car, in the CD player, for a year straight.
That's funny.
I just really liked it.
I remember when I used to listen to CDs in the car.
Yeah.
Like just changing them out.
Yeah.
You know.
I just left that one in. I liked it so much.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. That Garden State, I've still not seen that movie. That's a Zach Braff movie, right?
Yeah. You haven't seen that movie?
Is it good?
Oh, it's phenomenal. And the soundtrack is one of my favorites.
Yeah. I love those directors or those filmmakers that really dig into the music side of things. Tarantino always did. You know, Zach Braff, James Gunn.
Yeah.
Does too with the
Marvel stuff.
Yeah, the Marvel stuff. It's amazing with all of these TV shows that are out there now, how many of them include that music into the, I mean, it's not just background
music. I mean, it's well thought of in the process.
Yeah. Woven into the script and the story and the characters. It's so cool to see. And when I see it done that well, oh, I'm in.
You know? Well, and I think it's a lot easier in today's era for studios to license music than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Where bands were a little more restrictive and for whatever reason they're like, no, we don't want our music in that. But that's changed a lot.
I think the reason that's changed, and this is just a thought, but that was in the day when bands were making money from selling music.
Yeah.
And bands aren't making money from selling music anymore.
No. So they're like, screw it.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah. You're licensing it now.
Yeah.
But you know, they used to kind of look down their nose at bands that would license for movies or commercials or whatever. And now it's just, you know, it's just what they do.
Yeah.
So that's a great one, man.
Yeah.
I love the paper. It looks like this was just drawn in someone's notebook.
Yeah, it almost looks like a draft copy,
right,
of what the album cover is going to be.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And I truly like the albums that have flat covers and non-glossy color covers.
I do too. I think they're more pleasing.
They're more pleasing to the eye. They just look better.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's cool.
You're up.
I couldn't not bring Briefcase Full of Blues by the Blues Brothers. This is such a great record. I love everything about it. The music on it is fantastic. The band is world class. You know, you've got two dudes from Booker T and the MGs and all of these guys that played on all of these soul records for Chess and all these record labels. And to think that this whole thing sprouted from a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah.
This is such a great record. You've got Hey Bartender, Messing with the Kid, Almost, Rubber Biscuit, Shotgun Blues, Groove Me, I Didn't Know, Soul Man, B-Movie, Boxcar Blues, and Flip Flop and Fly. And this is a band that was put together. I think Paul Schaefer put this band together.
Yeah, I think you're
for
right.
For the movie when the skit happened on SNL. And it's like soul music with horns, and it's paying homage to these classic soul artists and songs. It's just so great. So when the Blues Brothers popped into my head immediately when we were thinking about this, and this is the only Blues Brothers record I have. I think they have one or two other records. There's the soundtrack to the movie.
Yeah.
And then I think they have one other studio album, but these guys, and Dan Aykroyd, you know, still is kind of helping hold up the blues movement in the U.S. So, you know, I think he's got a syndicated blues radio show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of helps out those blues artists. Because as we've said before, if it weren't for the dudes from the UK, we may not be talking about
right.
blues music today in the US, which is just unbelievably difficult to think of, but it's true. So, yeah, it's funny. It's the Blues Brothers, but it's black and white. So that's kind of ironic. But yeah, this is an album I got way early on when I started buying records again.
And it's, I mean, the whole film and the music with this, it's for people who love music.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose it's possible. I don't see how anyone who loves music doesn't like at least one of these songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's a good cross-section of classic rhythm and blues music. And most of it was driven by what these guys liked, you know?
Yeah.
Belushi was a huge fan of blues music. Belushi? Blues?
And they actually, they actually made a go of it in a country western bar.
I know, at Bob's Country Bunker. Such a great, it's one of those movies too that it's, if it's ever on, even if it's on broadcast and it's been chopped to hell, I will watch it.
Yeah.
Because it's just that good. It's just
you just gotta drop in for a little bit.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. It's just a ridiculous movie, but it's so great. And I don't think that when they started this whole thing it ever occurred to them that it would be such a big deal, and it was.
Yeah.
You know,
people just loved it.
Yeah. What's your next one?
All right. Next on the list. All right. And I had to bring out one I've talked about before, but
that's okay. That's okay.
But
you're forgiven.
Black Betty.
Bam-ba-lam. You know, I thought about this one and I'm like, if I had it, I would bring it, but I do not have it.
And really, Ram Jam, this cover, I remember being in my cousin's bedroom in the 70s, and he had this, and I was just fascinated with the cover, and he played it, and I'm like, I love that song.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, it just stuck with me, and he just played that out. He played the whole album over and over, and I'm like...
So, did you get it soon thereafter?
I can't even remember when I got this.
I love the back cover.
It's yeah, like
the
artwork is beautiful.
The ancient ruins, and like there they are in each level of the pyramid. The head has come off the top. Are these space guys?
Yeah, they're space guys because space guys built pyramids.
Yeah. Okay.
You knew that, right?
I did.
Of course.
I've at least heard that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I almost sent you this week the Nick Cave cover of Black Betty.
I have not heard that.
Oh, I'll post it on our page because it's a gem. I mean, it's very gothic and punkish, but it's just... I mean, Nick Cave has a very howling, distinct voice,
yeah.
And he really, really, and he pays more tribute to the original, or not even the original, but the...
Oh, the Lead Belly version.
Yeah, Lead Belly.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I have not heard that.
Yeah.
I have not heard a lot of bands play that song. I was in a band that attempted to play that song. We were like, oh, that'd be cool. That would be a cool cover. It's a hard one. It's a hard one to play because it's kind of like a jam, but it has distinct movements, and it's just hard to get that feel and to sell it. You know, that I mean, it really is a great performance of a song.
The Nick Cave version is not a jam.
Oh, well, I'll have to take a listen to it, man. That is very, very
it's fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is, and I'm not kidding, Black Betty is probably one of my top 100 favorite songs.
We need to do a 100 favorite songs
list
since we got through the essential albums.
And with, I don't know about everybody else, but with songs that I really like, the words are what really sucks me in.
Yeah.
So all covers are acceptable.
Okay.
I just love the song.
Yeah, yeah. Me too, man. It's about the music.
Yeah.
For sure. That's a good one.
You're up.
So I know it's probably super easy, or maybe too easy, but Black Sabbath's Master of Reality is my favorite Black Sabbath record. And this one was released in 1971. Master of Reality is actually the third studio album by Black Sabbath. This has Sweet Leaf, After Forever, Embryo, Children of the Grave, which I love, Orchid, Lord of This World, Solitude, and Into the Void. And it's just always stood out for me amongst Sabbath's stuff for some reason. I love this pressing of it. I just got this like 2 years ago or so. It is
gorgeous.
And I love this picture of the band inside. That's so cool. But I've always loved this record. Like I said, I don't know why. I mean, it's not like I spent a lot of time listening to Sabbath when I was a kid. When I heard Black Sabbath as a kid, it kind of scared me. You know? I mean, they were kind of an intimidating, dark band, and I think they played that up.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what people do when they have a certain character, and people like Pee Wee Herman. He was not really Pee Wee Herman, but
yeah,
you know, Paul Rubens went with it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole specter of like Satanism and all that stuff was played up. And at the time, you know, when I was a kid, you had like Shout at the Devil was really big, and Motley Crue played that whole thing up. But I love this record. I love the cover. This is kind of like the classic Black Sabbath typeface, and it's so cool. But yeah, I mean, you really can't go wrong with the Ozzy era Sabbath stuff. And even some of the other eras with different singers, like the Dio stuff is fantastic. And you know, they've had six or seven or eight singers in the band, but of Ozzy's stuff, this has always been my favorite. So this is the one I chose.
That's a good one. The third one.
The third Sabbath record. What's your next?
All right. So I've been pretty monotone on my color. A lot of black and white. Threw a dead rabbit in there, red. And now I'm going to open up with a bunch of color.
Awesome.
Agent Orange. Living in Darkness. See, so it gets me back to the black.
Yeah. You can't stray too far from that.
Agent Orange is an American punk rock band from Southern California, formed in 79.
Okay.
And they would, it was kind of a mix. They're they have a version of the Batman theme that is out of this world.
I love it.
But they kind of, it was like a genre going on in the early 80s, a kind of surf punk scene.
Cool.
That was big in, of course, L.A.
Yeah. And did you hear about these guys through?
Probably Trouser Press.
Trouser Press.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have, for a dude that grew up in the Midwest, you have a lot of like knowledge of those like independent labels and the bands that made them up.
Yeah, because the thing did, you counted on labels. Labels, I'm sure this on
Posh Boy.
Posh Boy, which I think later became Enigma. Yeah, Posh Boy is a Hollywood, California-based record label owned by British-educated Robbie Posh Boy Fields.
Hmm. Interesting.
He was a sometimes high school substitute teacher.
No kidding.
So there you go. Orange County rules.
Agent Orange.
Agent Orange.
Orange County.
Yeah, yeah.
Living in Darkness, back to black.
And they were a power trio.
Love that.
Yeah, they were just very, I mean, it just had a, it was like a surf rock from the 60s with an upgrade to
nice.
Punk.
I love it.
And it was just fun music.
And also one of those things that you bought at the time just on, there was a lot of trust involved because
oh yeah,
you probably did. You order this?
No, this was at the record store.
Oh, okay.
I mean, a lot of the stuff would show up and just not move really swiftly.
Yeah.
And yeah, heck, you know, in the 80s, there were several record stores in any town.
Yeah.
And I went to college in Evansville, and in Evansville, I worked at one record bar in the mall, and there was at least one or two more in that mall.
Yeah, there were three in the mall that I was in.
And there was a small little independent record store where you would go to get the unusual different stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. What I was saying was you either took a chance sending off ordering a record like this from the record label, or you found it in a record store and bought it, you know, sight unheard, sound unheard, because you couldn't just go to YouTube at the time and listen.
Or even go to the internet and type it in.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so strange how people take in music nowadays compared to the way that they used to. I mean, we used to buy records because of the way that the covers looked.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
And these independent ones, not so much. But you'd hear about independent bands through the magazines, the underground magazines and stuff that you might be interested in. And it's just a totally different time.
And you, label compilations or even soundtracks would turn you on to, ooh, I heard this band on this compilation.
Yeah, yeah. It was such a more innocent time.
It was innocent. And it was harder to find stuff that you may like.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you took a lot of chances on stuff.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
So, yeah.
Agent Good one.
Orange.
Love it.
Well, we can't talk about Colors, right, without talking about the White Album.
Oh.
But not the Beatles' White Album. Weezer's White Album. And this came out in April of 2016. This is their first record produced by Jake Sinclair. This album, I remember hearing, I think it's Girl, We Got a Good Thing is the first big song on this. And I heard it and I immediately, this is when I first started thinking that Rivers Cuomo was the new Brian Wilson, because you listen to this record and it almost sounds like a Beach Boys record, like updated, but it does. And I love the cover, like the monochromatic thing. They
high
do
contrast.
Yeah, they do that, you know, green album, blue album, red album, black album. And then they'll throw in Pacific Daydream as an album.
Or Pinkerton.
Yeah. So I really, really, as we go forth, I just love Rivers Cuomo more and more. And I thought he was really, really strange at first. You know, Buddy Holly and the Blue Album. I wasn't a huge fan then, of course. But as time has gone on, I mean, I just respect him as a songwriter. And the band obviously has a great time performing. So
that, you got, that is a good one.
Yeah. California Kids, Wind in Our Sail, Thank God for Girls, Girl, We Got a Good Thing, Do You Want to Get High, King of the World, Summer, Elaine and Drunk Dari, LA Girls, Jacked Up, and Endless Bummer, which I love.
It's very much, it's almost a concept album.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good. And, you know, when I was going through my records earlier, Weezer sprang to mind, of course, because of all the colors that the albums are named after. But this one really stood out. This really kind of got me into Weezer on a pretty serious level. So, and this, unfortunately, it looks like the top of this has been ripped by the movement of
the shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's okay. And you know what else I love? You got the sunbathers over here and then this guy with the metal detector.
And they're in the shade.
Yeah. And they're standing by the lifeguard stand. Yeah, man.
I just love the picture.
Yeah, I do too. It's very cool. So, not a dude that you would expect to see on the beach.
No. No.
All right, what's next?
All right, so I'm going to stay colorful. And you knew I had to bring this. New Order.
Of course.
And everything's gone green.
Yeah.
And this was an EP because their songs were so long. I mean, their songs are like 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
So the first thing, it may even be technically a 12-inch single. There's four songs on it. So, well, I know it's the third single by New Order. And New Order's releases at the time, not much was disclosed on the original sleeve. The single was originally released in Belgium, on Factory Belgium.
Okay.
And bared the catalog number.
And that's it.
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah.
Artwork on here.
Simplicity. So Everything Gone Green is a 5 minute and 30 second song. So it's not really, it was more of a dance song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where New Order really took off, was in clubs. And I mean, that's why the band decided to open a club, the Hacienda.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So besides producing music on their own label, Factory Records, they owned a club.
Okay.
Hacienda.
Okay.
And they were beginning to be, and that was kind of the undoing of the band, and it really kind of broke them up after a while, after they finally got rid of Hacienda, and it was just too many fingers and too many pies.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, most bands can't keep it together just being a band.
I mean, and this was a big, and when I say a club, it was like a music club.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a couple of stages and dance music every night. Bands like Happy Mondays and all these other bands who were on Factory's label.
That's cool.
So they're trying to manage bands, promoting bands, and a club, and themselves. It just became too much.
Kind of a tall order.
Yes.
Kind of a new tall order.
A new order.
That's a good one. I kind of figured that you would bring this one.
Oh, so, yeah.
That's awesome.
Had to have it.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Imperial Bedroom by Elvis Costello. And why are we talking about Imperial Bedroom by Elvis Costello? Because one of my favorite songs of his is called Almost Blue.
Perfect.
And it is on Imperial Bedroom. This is the album overall is just fantastic. Beyond Belief, Tears Before Bedtime, Shabby Doll, The Long Honeymoon, Man Out of Time, Almost Blue, and In Every Home, The Loved Ones, Human Hands, Kid About It, Little Savage, Boy with a Problem, Pigeon English, You Little Fool, and Town Crier. Now, he did, this is a promo, by the way.
Nice.
You see, for promotional use only. That was something that I never shied away from. I know Will talked about, you know, early on not wanting those and then wanting them. Anytime I saw that, I thought, oh, well, I should get that one. But I love the abstract artwork cover. The big thing is that song, Almost Blue. Now, he did an album before this called Almost Blue, but Almost Blue was not on the album, inexplicably.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, Almost Blue was his like country record. He really got into country and wanted to record, you know, kind of a country and western, or his version of a country and western album, and it wasn't very well accepted by critics or, you know, people buying the record. But the song Almost Blue has always been a favorite, and it's almost like a classic jazz ballad. And he's married to Diana Krall now, and I just saw her last year, and she played, her final song was Almost Blue.
Oh.
She said, well, I'm going to play a song about my husband, and played Almost Blue. And, you know, she's like a jazz singer, so it was so great, so perfect. He's one of those dudes that has, you know, kind of started out being known as like a punk icon in the 70s, even though his music's not punk, it's just, you know, like rock. But I think his attitude and a lot of the speed of the songs kind of came across as punk, and it was that time.
Well, yeah, and that's when he broke.
Yeah,
he broke with the Blondie Talking Heads movement.
Yeah. So I've told the story millions of times, but I really got into Elvis Costello like in the early 90s and have dug in since. And yeah, Almost Blue, I had to talk about because it's probably my favorite song by him. Elvis Costello and the Attractions, Imperial Bedroom.
I expected an Elvis to pop in there. And that one comes up on research as like one of the top 25.
Oh yeah. It's a great record. I mean, top to bottom. Even if it didn't have that song on it, I'd still be a big fan. But yeah, that's a good one. What's next?
All right, my last one. The Jam. And I gotta remember which song. Oh, Pretty Green. See?
Nice.
Staying in the green.
Yeah.
Keeping my palate in one mode.
Right. I like it. I like it.
Jam sound effects. I love every Jam record. This was, let's see, this came out in November of 1980, and it is the fifth studio album by the Jam on Polydor Records. And the cover art is used, it mimics like a sound effect album that was, you know, people would buy, I know it's hard to believe, but people used to buy sound effects on records.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have the internet.
No.
So you had to buy sound effects on records. So there were, you know, baby crying.
A hearse driving down the road.
Yeah. Pow, pop.
Exclamation point. Yeah. A dog barking.
Car crash.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was kind of a fun little album artwork.
What's the From the Cradle to the Grave mean?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought I'd ask. I just love, I love the whole motif, the takeoff of the sound effects thing. You know, what year was this? Did you say that already? 1980. So this kind of thing would have been around a lot in 1980.
Yeah, yeah, you could dig through bins and you would find these sound effect records.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, we've found a few when we've been out digging.
Yeah.
Occasionally. It's such a blast from the past. I mean, you know, we talk about these things being little time machines, and they really are, because, you know, I look at this and I immediately think to that. And then I think to like the digital sound libraries when CDs came out, you know, you could subscribe to that, or, you know, buy 20 volumes of sound effect CDs, and yeah, just different times. I know that anything that they've done, you've been a big fan of.
Yeah, I just, you know, they were one of the early bands of that post-punk sound.
Yeah.
In the late 70s and early 80s, and they just, I don't know, something about, and they were a power trio too.
Yeah.
Something about their sound that just really grabbed me.
Well, and it's a time and place thing too.
Yeah.
Nothing can compare to that like band or those couple of bands that really hit you at that very impressionable time. And I've taken many of those with me through my life for sure.
And That's Entertainment is probably my favorite Jam song that closes out side one.
Okay.
My favorite Jam song of all time.
I'll have to check it out.
The live version is the best.
But it's the way to go. Awesome, man. I love it. The Jam, sound effects.
Number 80.
Okay.
You got one more?
Well, I don't know that you can expect me to talk about Colors without mentioning Kind of Blue. This is my MOV press of this, and I think this may be 45 RPM.
I think you're right.
But this is the classic jazz record, best-selling jazz record of all time. And, you know, I love listening to it. I love listening to all of Miles' stuff. He was an icon before, like, I mean, he was like a rock star, but in the jazz world, and just such an interesting dude. Probably not a great person, you know, had drug issues, had issues with women, and, you know, pretty hard to work for. But a lot of people in those positions, those genius level folks, are all kind of like that. There's a million presses of this, but then you have in the middle, you have this gatefold, which kind of gives you a little historical stuff, like all the great jazz albums do.
Do you happen to have a mono press of this?
I do not. I have.
That would be interesting to hear.
Oh, I'd love to get a mono press. But this is kind of a twofer as well. I mean, this has a couple alternate. I don't think this is 45, come to think of it. I think this has a couple alternate songs on it.
They threw another record in there.
Yeah. It's kind of a twofer because Blue and Green covers too. So
nice.
Yeah. I like to throw jazz on and just chill out on a Sunday morning, or really anytime. Anytime if I want to kind of decompress, I'll throw a jazz record on.
Great decompression music.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can't go wrong starting or stopping with Miles, and that's where we are. We could probably do 3 or 4 more shows about Colors.
Yeah. And I mean, we even left off a classic, Purple Rain by Prince.
I tried to avoid that one because that's probably naturally one of the ones.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, it's going to be Purple Rain.
Yeah.
And we avoided Back in Black by AC/DC.
Yeah. Well, we just talked about AC/DC recently with Will. There's so many of them. There's so many little fine details.
Yeah.
In albums, you know, we also talked about maybe a Numbers show, because there's plenty of those. So, you know, when you're talking about bands or song titles or album titles, so we could do that too. But I love taking a look at my collection from a different perspective.
Yeah. Putting on a different lens to look at it and try to find, and I did some online research and I saw some stuff pop up. I'm like, I'm just going to pull out records and see who has songs about Colors.
Yeah.
And that was a more fun way to approach it.
Yeah. I thought of the ones that I could, and then I looked some others up. There's a lot of lists out there.
Oh yeah.
Of Colors, and a lot of stuff, filling the bill. But yeah, it's cool to, like you said, put a different lens on and look at your collection from another perspective.
Yeah, because a lot of the songs we mentioned are not really standout tracks on the record.
Right, right. And the deep tracks on records are the ones that I love anyway. So, well, it's been a lot of fun, man. I'm glad
we
could do
it. It's been a good
show. Yeah. How many episodes in are we? We're almost to 60, I think. And I never would have guessed that we'd...
That we'd do 60 episodes.
I never would have guessed that we'd do 60 episodes, but that we'd be able to come up with cool ideas and themes for episodes that kind of keep it fresh.
Yeah.
And that's why I love doing this, because we managed to do that.
Yeah.
And it's always a lot of fun. We could not do this without the help of Keith Toombs and Jacob Hansen. They are kind of the foundation that helps keep this whole thing together. We put the whole set back together today. That was kind of a nice bonding experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just trying to do the shows more frequently, and we're trying to get that content out to you more frequently too. So we have all of these tasty video morsels on our YouTube page, and so many things for you to sink your teeth into. We want you guys to like all of that stuff, subscribe to that YouTube page. We want you to comment. We want you to share it with folks who haven't seen it. We expect a lot of you all to help us out, to get the gospel of vinyl out into the brains and the eyes and ears of all of those poor unsuspecting folks out there on the interwebs, I guess, right?
Praise, brother!
So we want to thank all of you guys for watching, listening, helping out, coming to see us at record shows, and doing all of that stuff that you guys do. So for Wheels, I'm Jay, and we'll see you all the next time around.